Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sport Intern Special, a series of podcasts in which we speak to the movers and shakers within the Olympic movement, presented by me, Ashish Sharma. In this episode, we continue our conversation with the CEO of World Aquatics, Brent Nowicki. Recently, World Aquatics changed its name from FINA, the International Swimming Federation, and I began our conversation by asking Brent what was the reason behind the change.
We have to evolve. I mean, we say it a lot, and you know, we all consider ourselves to be a bit of sharks. We're all sharks, right? And when sharks start swimming, they die. We can't stop swimming. We must keep moving at all times. And I think, you know, when you look at any company, you know, there's always tradition. There's pride in that tradition. There's legacy in that tradition. There's a lot of great stories that come out of tradition. But again, if you stop swimming, you die. And I think many people around the table felt like that for many, many years, FINA stopped swimming. And if we didn't start making some significant changes, we could find ourselves in an irreversible position. And we didn't want that to be the case, at least not under our watch. The president has proven himself to be a progressive president, an open-minded and engaging president, a president with a vision and mission to change. And so it just felt natural that, you know, we had a company that had great tradition, had great stories, had a great legacy, but hadn't evolved. And notably, when you look at the name of the company, you know, it wasn't what was in the door. It wasn't what was in the pool. I mean, we had evolved out of swimming. We had brought in a number of other disciplines, which obviously everyone knows, but we had a name that didn't reflect that. So we needed to get that in place. And so we went through a lengthy process to figure out what would be the best and the most appropriate name to bring our community back together. And then we looked at our branding and our mark and asked ourselves the same thing. I mean, did the imagery that we were putting out to the public really reflect who we were? Was it recognizable? Was it identifiable? You know, did our future generation want to wear that logo and mark on hats and t-shirts proudly? And we spent a lot of time talking with people, engaging with our audience, engaging with our fans, engaging with our families, engaging with our athletes, engaging with our coaches, officials. I mean, right down the line. And, you know, the results were quite telling for us. So I think it was one of the, well, certainly a momentous decision, certainly an important one. It was almost one of the easiest decisions that we had to make. I mean, because we had the support on our side.
Timing is always important. Mm-hmm. In any business, in any federation, in sporting arenas. Was there a specific thinking behind making the announcement at the end of last year? Or was it just a natural progression, a natural evolution to get to that stage and say, right, now we're here, let's just say it?
It was intentional. It was intentional because when we had taken office, the president had taken office, and I sat behind this desk the first time, as you and your readers will recall, I mean, we committed to making a series of reforms. And one specific item within that reform was a new constitution. And so as we started down this process of changing and modernizing our constitution, notably the name of a company would be reflected in the constitution. And so when we determined that the term or the mandate of the reform committee was to expire per se, and their work was done, the culmination of that was a new constitution. And so with that new constitution warranted the vote in determination of whether we should change the name of the company. So naturally, it was intentional in the sense that, okay, now at this Congress, we're going to pass the new constitution. So now the Congress, obviously, we should be, you know, is the right time for us to propose the name change and include it in the new constitution and launch it with it. So obviously, it was timed like that for a reason.
It seems like that there seems to be, with the energy crisis that everyone's experiencing, a closure now of local swimming pools. And there's been concern expressed by member federations. What concerns do you have as a governing body? What kind of help, support can you give?
I mean, I think for us, we dealt with this during COVID. We dealt with pool closures during COVID. Interestingly enough, one of the positive takeaways from that was the increase in people swimming in open water. So there was a massive spike in the community of open water swimming when the pools closed. So while that be a positive takeaway, I mean, our concerns are still that, you know, water provides more than just sporting opportunities. Water provides a life skill. It provides a health necessity. And I think, frankly speaking, it's a bit short-sighted to think that you can save money by preventing people from participating in an activity that meets more than just a sporting requirement. And there needs to be an understanding that while cuts, you know, of course need to be made, they need to be made intelligently. Then perhaps they need to be more open-minded about when the facility is shut down, ensuring that there is sufficient ample pools open to meet the needs, to touch upon some of those other life skills. And the trickle-down effect is what concerns me. You know, I mean, the window of opportunity for a youth or a child to start to learn to swim, you know, doesn't stop that athlete from drowning. You know, what we prevent an athlete from having access to a swimming lesson today, you know, it's not that we can pick this back up in a year, because guess what's going to happen between now and a year? We're going to see another 100,000 deaths across the world because some child didn't know how to swim. And that's my concern, is being able to not being able to undo the recourse of closing pools for reasons that I think are completely avoidable. And we are prepared and are going to continue to prepare to work with our federations to ensure that that does not happen.
Would some of that support include financial aid?
Yeah, I mean, I think we have to look at what the needs are, right? I mean, you know, money is great, but money isn't always the answer to throw at things to make problems go away. I think you have to look at actually what are the issues? What's the prevention? Is it manpower? Is the issue really money? I don't know. I mean, I think every pool is going to be on a case-by-case basis to determine why it's closed and what decisions led to a certain pool closure. Is it, you know, lack of transportation to get to the pool? Is that the issue? So I think, again, looking case by case, we'll make that determination as to how to best have meaningful impact on the problem.
What you saw during the pandemic was people going into open water, going into rivers, perhaps, and there are lots of issues about clean rivers. How much of a concern is that for you and for the future survival of your sport? And how much are you putting your efforts into promoting the idea that we really need to have clean waterways? It's an imperative part of the future for your sport.
Yeah, I mean, it's wildly important. I mean, we're about to embark on a wonderful Olympic Games in Paris, and there's certainly no shortage of commentary and discussions about the water that our open waters will be swimming in the Olympic Games. So we're obviously cognizant of that. We're cognizant of the discussions that are going on worldwide about water. You know, we are constantly working with our sports medical team to look at water quality levels, the fluctuations in water quality levels, to ensure that we're putting our competitors in safe water. Obviously, we have a vested interest in ensuring that water is clean. Water is the field of play in which we work. It doesn't do us any good to promote sport on a field of play that's dirty. You know, you wouldn't see that in any other sport. So obviously it's important for us to make sure that we have an inviting, exciting, and safe and clean field of play for our young athletes and our elite athletes. We have a custodial duty of water. We have programs in place. We continue to work on them and develop them in various different ways. We try to make it a focal point going forward, and have in our agreements with some sponsors and also with our host cities to ensure that part of the promotion of our events not only concerns the event itself, but the surrounding community that the event will be taking place in, so that we can gather support from the people of the communities in which we're serving for these events and help them be a part of the event. And one way to get them to be a part of the event is to help clean up the water that'll be used by our athletes at that event in their city coming up. So there's some unique things that we're working on and certainly unique ways in which we can promote health and safe, clean water.
Yeah, and I suppose that also fits very much in line with the Olympic Agenda 2020+5 that the IOC is very much pushing. Have you noticed, maybe it's more anecdotal than it is statistical, but as you were saying that with the pandemic and the closure of pools, a lot of people were taking to open water. Have you noticed that there are more athletes now who are more interested in participating in events that are more open water events, and that makes you more, you know, sort of concerned about making sure that these waterways are clean all the way across?
Look, again, the massive resurgence in open water swimming, great interest at varying levels. I think before the closures of these pools, you know, this was something that we always felt firmly about. I don't think it took this for us, the light bulb, to go off. It's been on our radar since day one. And we've actively pursued and developed the build out of programs well before, you know, this podcast and well before those articles started to surface earlier in the weeks. It's well on our radar. It's well in the way we're thinking, and it's well in our discussions with our athletes to ensure that they're taken care of in this respect.
I just wanted to ask you personally, what aspects of the calendar year or of work that World Aquatics is planning to unfold this year that you're particularly excited about?
We're still reeling back a little bit from COVID. We're still trying to sort out the calendar issues that have plagued not only World Aquatics, but I think all federations. You know, we see great light at the end of the tunnel after the Olympic Games. We think really 2024 is the breakthrough moment for our sports. One of the highlights that we've really focused on and have done really, really well, our digital team has put in an enormous amount of effort of refocusing our digital engagement with our athletes, our stakeholders, our audience. We've seen tremendous success in our ratings as it concerns our engagement on social media. We've done a remarkable job, I think, of winning back, if that's the right way to say it, winning back the trust of our athletes, you know, really making them feel that we are trying to work for them and that the decisions that we make are really about them. And I think we've done that. I mean, we've seen it. I mean, you walk around the pool deck and athletes are smiling again. You know, they're happy again. They want to see you. You know, they don't, I think, you know, historically that was sort of, they didn't want to see FINA. It was kind of like the devil on the deck. And I think now athletes are happy to see the president. They're happy to see our staff. They're engaging. We're listening to them. We want to know how to make these events better. And I think that means everything to them. And I think that's really a testament to the work of the president and our staff that have put in that time to really build this 360-degree engagement of our athletes, both, again, as I mentioned, on the digital side, but on the human side. We've done a remarkable job of listening. You know, President and I say it all the time, you know, we're going to spend the first year of our tenure listening, going on that listening tour, really trying to hear what matters most. You know, when I started here, and looked at the calendar and said, okay, why are top athletes not attending our events? Why are they choosing other events over our events? Or why are they skipping out on some of our events? You know, you have to ask yourself, what's wrong? Is it, you know, why, how do we get them back into the fold? And I just assumed, maybe naively so, that maybe our prize money wasn't attractive enough. Maybe our competition schedule wasn't attractive enough for them. But as you listen to them, you realize that it's not about throwing a little bit more money at the prize pool that's really going to incentivize them to come to the events. None of them in the top five reasons did money come up. It was about creating attractive environments for them to swim, putting them in front of fans that encourage them to do their best, getting them in exciting cities that they could enjoy and their families could come out and support them and enjoy. You know, putting events on a calendar in time periods which, you know, complemented their training schedules. This is what mattered to them. And we learned that by listening.
And that was Brent Nowicki, the CEO of World Aquatics. Don't forget, you can catch up with all the latest that's happening in the world of sport by subscribing to the Sport Intern newsletter, produced every day, Monday to Friday. So until the next time, stay safe.